available.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Thanks. This is, of course, the first meeting of our standing subcommittee, and because it is a standing subcommittee, it is a public meeting, and for that reason, we have meeting being recorded. The few things that I wanted to just kind of start out with is let everybody know if you are not speaking and you need to step away, if you can put the phone on mute and not on hold. The other thing is, I know that we reserved 2 hours for this subcommittee meeting, but I really don't believe it's going to take quite that long. But of course, we have that time reserved. One other thing that I wanted to note is that we were just recently informed by Judge Earl, the chair of the presiding the Budget Advisory Committee meeting, that this item, because of the number of items that are on the agenda for May, will not make it on the May agenda, but will certainly be on the agenda for the July meeting, which should give us ample time to, make the appropriate distributions for the various courts. And, of course, the Judicial Council will take that up later in the month, and that's generally when we start seeing some of the other activities going on. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. Do we need to take roll, or did we already?
For the record, we should take roll,
okay.
David.
Okay, so I can go ahead and take it.
Thanks, Patrick.
Judge Boris is here. David, you're here. Judge Coughlin.
Present.
Judge DeSantos.
Present.
Judge Harmon.
Present.
Judge Kuhl.
Here.
Judge Maragonda.
Present.
Alan Carlson.
Here.
Jose Guillen. Mary Beth Todd.
Here.
Was that Jose?
Please join, please.
That's Kurt Soderlund.
Oh. Hi, Kurt.
Hey.
We're just getting started. So why don't we jump into the item today? I know all of you have already received the material that we're going to be discussing today. One of the advantages with this particular item is that there is a nexus between realignment and the steps that we had taken previously. I had co-chaired that particular subcommittee with Judge Wesley, thanks for his leadership and his input on how to best move forward with the realignment cases. So we're able to capitalize on some of the learnings from that process, as well as take some of the experiences that we have going on in the different courts related to the Prop 47 cases. And I just wanted to tee up the item. Similar to the realignment cases, we were not sure the volume that we were going to see. So we approached that very deliberately. We tried to take into consideration that some of the courts were moving forward at a faster pace than others, and taking that process in trying to overlay the experiences that we have with the 47 cases, I think it's given us some advanced knowledge of some approaches going forward. And in working with Judge Boris and the Judicial Council staff, we wanted to fold in some of the proposals that we had talked about and present them to the subcommittee for consideration and a recommendation to the Budget Advisory Committee at the appropriate time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Judge Boris with any thoughts that you have, Judge.
No, I think that what we tried to do was
take into consideration what happened in real life when we came up with the proposals, which is we got reports from some courts that public defenders and defense attorneys on November, what, 5th, showed up in their courtrooms and demanded immediate Prop 47 relief. Other courts required some filings of petitions, and so we needed to take some sort of options to take into consideration what really happened in the courts and what's happening up to this point in time.
And in that regard, the information that we've received has been support from the governor's office, and certainly demonstrated that by including in his proposed budget in January $26.9 million to be available to the trial courts to process these cases. At this point, unless LACO has heard differently, we're still anticipating that earmark that would be available to us, and so we're going to be moving forward with presenting the recommendation and the methodology to support how the monies would be best distributed. And for that, I was going to turn it over to Patrick to go over the specific details.
I'd just like to chime in on that then. In terms of Prop 47 funding in both houses, the amount for 1516 has been approved in both houses, but they agree with the LAO that we should wait and see where the workload is before we commit the legislature to funding the remaining balance of over $7 million in 1617. Not that they're not supportive of it, but just think it's premature to make a commitment given the uncertainty in the workload.
So would it be fair
that's
to say,
good.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that's exceptional news, and I guess it would be fair to say that we have to be very sensitive to providing some of the workload data so that when we visit the DOF that we need to have a reinfusion of money or reimbursement of money that we've made the case based on what we've experienced. Yes? Okay. So with that, Patrick, unless there are any other questions, I wanted to see if he can go through some of the details. And, I know that there have been a few questions that have come up since, but maybe we can address them right now. So, Patrick?
Okay. So the materials reflect four options. Three are for the allocation methodology, and then the fourth option is to set aside a reserve. This was done with the criminal realignment allocations, and it was very useful at times for that data wasn't available at the time of the allocation and for a couple of courts and came in handy. So that's the fourth option. The first three options, like I said, are on the methodology for allocating the 26.9. There are attachments, attachments for illustrative purposes of allocation tables. The information is just for example that we don't have all the information yet. We're still collecting the information. So they're just really for to assist in determining the methodology.
Right. So, they're for example purposes. Because we don't have all the data, I would caution all of the committee members not to get married to those numbers, because as the courts slowly begin to report in the fashion that we need them to, the numbers might change. Not dramatically, but they might change. So I would just ask that no one get married to the particular numbers of any particular court.
Okay. So the first option would be a one full year allocation using the percentages of Proposition 47 petitions and felony filings. So the amount would be allocated all at once. It would be based on the data that from November 5th of 2014 to May 31st of 2015. It would be based on 10-year average percentage of statewide felony filings, and it would be allocated in July as $26.9 million. So the 50% of the allocation would be based on just a one period of time from November to May, the end of May of 2015 data for Prop 447. Option two is to
Before you go forward, can I just circle back on the issue of felony filings? The reason that we thought that taking a look at a 10-year average was many of the cases that we're seeing right now go back about 10 years. I mean, they're very old, and some of the judges that I've spoken with have said, you know, they're getting cases from the 90s. Well, we had to kind of draw a line at some point, and so that's one of the reasons why we didn't want to be too short, but we didn't want to be too long, keeping in mind that we're talking with about $13 million statewide, and so we needed to, you know, have a finite universe of cases to distribute the 13.45. So, thanks.
So, this is Mary Beth. Just so I understand what this 10-year average represents, this represents the average annual filings over a 10-year period?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not the average. I thought we had actual filing data from each of those years.
Correct. It is. Hi, this is Francine Byrne from the Criminal Justice Services Office. It is looking at the actual felony filings over 10 years and then calculating the statewide percentage of those filings. So, for example, Alameda, I don't actually remember offhand what the raw data are, but they accounted for about 3% of the statewide felony filings averaged out over 10 years. So this way we can sort of correct also for blips. Every court often will have some sort of data, you know, some sort of problematic data issue maybe in 1 year. And so if you spread it out over 10 years and do the average over 10 years, then we can account for any kind of anomalies in the data.
So I'm not sure I'm still clear on that then. So the average number that is that the annual filings data that has been averaged, or is the percentage what was averaged?
It was the filings data was average, and then the percent of that average.
Okay.
Someone just joined. I just heard a thing. Okay. Okay, so moving on to option two, and at any point, if members have any questions, please stop me, and I will work on responding to them. So the two-half-year allocations using Proposition 47 data, and again, the felony filings, the same average for the 10 years, it would be 50% of the $26.9 million, and it would be allocated 50%, so it would be $6.725 million based on the Prop 47 data, and it would from November to May, through May of 2015. And then 6.725 would be based on the average of 10-year filings. The second part of the year, kind of like what we did with realignment, would be based on the same methodology, but it would be using a more current period. So the period would change, and it would be from July 2015 to through December 2015.
And what are the reasons to look at the more current data? In hearing back from many of the courts, we had heard that their respective jurisdictions were getting ready to send a bunch of cases via petitions to the different courts. So we wanted to make sure that what we're seeing at the early stages is not necessarily going to be the methodology to distribute the second half of the money as in option one. So making sure that we could contemplate or consider those petitions that are perhaps being backed up and ultimately coming to the court's direction will be folded into how the monies would be distributed. So doing it all in one shot at the beginning of the year versus making sure that we take a deliberate approach to evaluating the workload that every court is seeing as a whole, and then making that distribution accordingly.
Okay. So option three is really a hybrid of the first two. It's the first allocation would be in July, and it would be based on the felony filings, the average of 10 years, and also the period of and half would be based on the Prop 47 data from November through May of 2015. The second half of the allocation in January would be based only on Prop 47 data. It would not be based on any felony filings historical data. Any questions?
I don't know. Is Jose joined?
Yes, that would be listening only, and I am now joining your discussion.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Okay. So the option four would be really would be to set aside a reserve. The amount that is being proposed in this option is $100,000, and that's, again, because courts are still implementing and modifying Proposition 47 procedures, and so not all the data is available, and this would be set aside of the $26.9 million for courts who didn't have the information at the time and had to have an adjustment for their allocation based on the timing of the allocation.
Yeah, on the AB 109 committee, what we did was we set aside a reserve amount because what we were initially given by the Department of Corrections as far as parole violation hearings, some counties had zero. We were told, oh, based on our statistics, they're going to have zero. Well, it turned out some of the smaller counties had one or two, and they were not originally allotted any money because of the statistics given by the Department of Corrections. So by setting aside some small amount of money, we were able to have money to give to those counties that had expended resources on AB 109 parole violations when the Department of Corrections said there will be no parole violations in these counties.
So with that, are there any questions about the different approaches? I know there's a lot of information that people may be hearing for the first time. There is some level of consistency with what we were trying to do as it relates to how we handle the realignment cases. Everybody is kind of advancing at a different pace. We didn't want to leave anybody out of the process, and obviously make sure that we have resources available for those courts who are catching up slowly, because some of the reasons for the slow nature of the petition filings may be tied to how things are happening with our county partners, but obviously we want to recognize and make sure resources are available to all of the courts seeing this workload. So are there any questions about the information? I want to make sure everybody's really clear on how we kind of tackled this one.
David, this is Jose Guillen. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Just offered another option or a consideration by the subcommittee. Given that the bulk of the petitions have already been processed during this fiscal year, the money is for incoming fiscal years. Courts have absorbed probably the lion's share of most of the immediate petitions. The fact that some courts did not have a system in place to track this additional work, especially, you know, cases that were placed on calendar without a petition, I offer two considerations. One is to the extent that we have information that can capture the Proposition 47 eligible cases for the B offenses. That would be a better gauge for a fair distribution because that is going forward. The other option is, assuming that that is just too cumbersome and the data is not readily available, you know, maybe just the felony filings may be a better proxy because it really is a total of that population that would have some eligible Proposition 47 cases. And I think it will, in the end, you know, come in the wash. So
let me offer two thoughts, and I don't know if you were on the call early on.
Yes, I have been.
Oh, you have been. Okay. I was just simply going to say that the information that I've received from some courts is that they've got a pile of petitions waiting to be filed. So I don't know that the bulk of the workload that we're going to be seeing has been seen already. I think there's, you know, especially from the large courts that I've heard from, they're awaiting thousands of petitions being filed. So if we were to look at just the filings of felony workload as the exclusive determinant for distributing the money, they may not get the recognition for the associated workload there. And I know that particularly when you're talking about workload, there's been adjustments in petition or felony filings in different jurisdictions as well. So, you know, the idea of looking at felony filings is definitely very valid. But as I was saying, that so many courts have already shared with me that they're expecting thousands of Prop 47 petitions coming in. That may be kind of a dissuasive element, but this is a subcommittee, and I'll defer to everybody else for their thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to throw in a couple thoughts, and that is I think some counties, if we did it simply by felony filings, it's not going to accurately reflect a lot of things. I mean, with all due respect to some big counties, but like Alameda, Los Angeles, I'm Riverside and San Bernardino, they probably had filed over all those years a lot of felonies that didn't and will never qualify for Prop 47. That's just my thought. So if we divided it strictly by felony filings, we could divide up money to give to counties that don't actually have cases that are eligible. Whereas by doing it by count on the petitions, it gives us a little bit of a more accurate view of what cases are being found eligible for Prop 47 relief.
This is Judge Harmon. I have a thought on this. Being a county that when this first started and we were getting petitions on day one and did not have particularly a way to track it, what if we, in looking at option two, what if we take option 2A and delete the portion where the percentage of statewide petitions during November 5th, 2014 to May 31st and just make that initial half-year allocation totally based on felony filings and then 2B, the second half of the distribution, based on the statewide petitions and the 10-year average for the second half? And because I think at this point, certainly by July 1st, everybody has in place some type of a tracking mechanism. But I know from my own court, we had a number of oral petitions that were taking place in court, and they were being granted in court, and no one was tracking them because no one knew how to do it at the time. And additionally, there were a number of pro per petitions filed, I think trying to capture the November 5, 2014 to May 31st, 2015 is really, really difficult.
David, this is Judge DeSantis from Kings County.
Yes, sir.
I'm little bit in agreement with the judge because, again, even though we're a small court, we did have on the first 2 to 3 weeks tons of oral petitions being filed demanding that we go ahead, and we didn't have anything in place to capture. In fact, really, we've been cut so thin as to workload, we're still having a difficult time capturing, even though we do have a process in place. So using the felony filings, I think, is a good portion, whether it's in option one or even in option 2A, 100% probably would help us to continue to track in the second portion in the 2B formula.
Thank you. Other thoughts?
Yeah, this is Alan. I think the felony filings is a nice surrogate, although as Judge Boers pointed out, you don't know what percentage of them are really eligible in that sense. But clearly there's a huge variance as to how fast this happens. And I wouldn't want to penalize the people that had to deal with it up front or couldn't get them, or the people that are dealing with them. They haven't come yet, but they're coming. It seems to me we should use the actuals for part of the money that we know, you know, up through whatever, May or June, and then hold the, half the money or some portion and distribute that based on actual data from later. Because that way you give people credit for what they've already done, and you save money to give people credit for what's coming. But, you know, having L.A. in third place on the petition filings, clearly that's, you know, it's, there's differences in when the, how fast things are processed, as well as counting. So it seems to me you got numbers on actual. We ought to be using that and not a surrogate. But we need to have something that has the option for, you know, the systems haven't gotten started up yet and it's going to show up this summer or this fall.
Right. And one of the things that I guess I've also learned is that you may have some jurisdictions where they are not eligible, yet there is a petition filing, only to be told, hey, you're not eligible. So you do the review and then you reach a conclusion, so there's work associated with that. So it almost masks or distorts the associated workload with a petition filing, right? So I know it's not a perfect measurement, but we were not really clear on how we were going to unveil this thing because this happened so quickly. We had oral petitions, we had formal petitions being filed, and since the folks were there, I think in many instances the courts just acted very quickly because the proposition had passed and had the associated activity. So not perfect. We're maybe a few of the cases that would be eligible are slipped through the crack, but generally speaking, what you don't catch on the felony filings, you catch on the petition filings, and somewhere in between as we start getting a better handle on how to count these cases, maybe looking at both universes gives us a chance to assess and then figure out how to talk about distributing the second half of the year's money. But other folks I know have some thoughts as well, so I'll wait to hear from all of you.
David, this is John Conklin in Fresno. You know, what I think I hear everybody saying is we need to remember the lessons we learned on our Prop 36 cases, and that is not jumping into this too quickly. And I think the method that I hear you talking about, where we use certain statistics first and then have time later on to decide how to use the filings, is the wisest one. So I agree that we go with what we know in the short term and then wait some time before we figure out how to do the second half.
And I think that following, just to track what you're talking about, Judge Conklin, is looking at option two, at least 2A, for distributing the first half using a methodology based on what we have collected so far, and then retool or reload the information and figure out what we're going to do in the second half of the year. Is that correct?
Yep, you said it better than I did.
This is Judge Harmon. My concern about that is, as I stated, using the first part of that 2A. I mean, I'm fine with, you know, reconvening as to 2B. But as to 2A, that first part where we're saying we're going to take a percentage of statewide petitions for that particular time period, I don't think we have accurate numbers on that. So I don't think that is at all an accurate distribution, as opposed to taking the average percentage that's, you know, the second part of that. And I think there's a lot of courts that will get hurt because they're in the same position we were, where you're getting a number of petitions, oral, handwritten, all kinds of things, and there's no accounting for those. And those took tremendous time from each of the judges. And as to Alan's, you know, comment about a lot of petitions that maybe don't qualify, I still get multiple petitions a week that don't qualify. They still get placed on my calendar. They get called and have to be dealt with. And so I think there are a number of counties dealing with that, too. For those of us that have a state prison, you know, where people have been sent back to prison for drugs in prison, who think because they possess drugs it qualifies, we're getting lots of those petitions.
This is Judge Maragana. I agree with Judge Harmon. I think the data for the first 6 months that we're looking at is still a little bit sketchy and in flux. We're all trying to capture what oral petitions might have been granted, and we're still working on that. And I do like the idea of perhaps using a set fixed number that we know, which is the 10-year average, and then later being able to calculate in the number of percentage of the statewide petitions.
Yeah, but this is Judge Boris. I think that my problem with that is that the courts, if you take a look at the chart, there are some courts, and I'm just going to, because I happen to be looking at it, I mean, Orange County has tracked petitions from the outset. So unless you give us a chance to recompense, to get that back at some point in time, because our statistics are not a little shaky. I mean, I'm looking at maybe Alameda County. Their statistics, it looks like, I mean, there's just no way that they have like 300 and some odd petitions so far in certain categories. I mean, they're going to have some that are going to come later. But I think option two, where we cover some of these oral petitions and things like that with respect to the splitting up the statewide filings for the 10-year average, and giving the courts that did up front capture statistics, giving them their share for work that's already been done. At the second round, someone mentioned we reconvene. At the second round, it's most likely that those petitions from those courts are going to get greatly reduced, and the petitions for the people who now had a chance to count more accurately are going to grow as far as getting money under the formula.
And Judge, maybe one piece of information that might be helpful is when we first saw realignment come our way, we had the same challenge of trying to figure out how do we count these cases, and noticed all of the courts that if you want to make sure that your workload is, considered, that the filing of petitions was the vehicle that we ultimately landed on. So it's kind of late in the ball game to say, hey, we're going to rely exclusively on petitions going back to November. But I think it would be proper notice, if you will, that if we're talking about distributing monies and we're trying to be consistent with our approach, that looking at formal petitions being filed going forward would be supportable, certainly with the Department of Finance, and give folks, we're talking about, let's say, in July, giving folks opportunity to kind of gear up to move in that direction, because ultimately, going back to what Zlatko had mentioned, the state is not yet convinced that the amount of money that they're going to earmark for this program has been justified. So in the end, it's going to be very, very important for us to have a solid database to present to Department of Finance that it wasn't just based on a belief that a certain percentage of felony filings constituted Prop 47 cases, but rather a hybrid which took into consideration those old cases as well as actual petitions that make up the additional workload that we're seeing and of course need some funding to support. So those are just some of the considerations that we took into consideration at the last activity related to this subcommittee, and it's not going to be perfect, and I'm hearing that some courts had informal petitions at the outset as courts started to, you know, wrap their hands around, you know, tackling these cases, and, you know, hearing from Judge Boris, who really instituted very formal procedures in Orange, and the numbers are solid, and all of the courts have been reporting filing a petition information that, you know, Shelley and Patrick and Francine have been compiling. So the information has been captured monthly, but obviously, you know, as Judge Harmon had indicated, some of them are oral petitions, and I'm in that boat too. We've had our court, our DA was actually one of the authors of the bill and had advocated the oral petition. So we're certainly going to not capture that volume of cases, but the fact that we're looking at felony filings will hopefully make up the difference, realizing that no solution is absolutely perfect.
But we also don't have to stick with the 50-50. If we thought that it should go 60-40 to give the oral petition courts a little bit more of a leg up, we could probably slide the scale on that. That was just a suggestion that we had.
So this is Mary Beth, and, you know, I guess where I'm struggling is, given, you know, where everybody's saying what stage they are of reporting is, if we really want to get to something that maps closer to what the actual experience was, whether they were oral petitions or filed petitions, it seems to me then our, if we went after option two, then the second phase of the reporting, there would be some form of a true-up. Is that what's being contemplated here? So instead of only looking at the data from July 1st to December 31st, we look at the data we've now collected for the whole period and do some form of a true-up to see, are there any adjustments needed? And I think that's what I'm hearing, but I'm not sure. If it's not what I'm hearing, I'm thinking that's where we kind of need to go to be most reflective of the actual workload here.
And I don't know, Mary Beth, if you can do a true-up on petitions filed when they weren't captured.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't have any. I mean, that's a good suggestion, because then we're super accurate as accuracy can be under our reporting system. But the question to the courts, and if some of you are on the phone, is can you go back to November 5th and start to capture the actual statistics if we just gave the first 50% in felony filings?
Well, I thought that's what I was hearing, was some of you were indicating that you had backlogs, and so even though they were filed prior to May 31st, maybe they haven't been counted yet. I agree. It would be hard to go back and recreate. I would groan audibly if somebody came back to me and said, go back and figure that out.
Well, and I think the bottom line is you can't. I don't think you can go back and capture what was never captured to begin with. So all the oral petitions that we granted, that we handled in court, I don't know how we would go back and recapture those.
So
especially all the various courts that are changing systems.
Yeah, because if we're not doing a true-up, then if we use felony filings, you know, to disperse the first 50% or whatever percentage to kind of be the stabilizer there, but then in the second half of the year, we don't. Well, then for those courts that did capture their petitions and did a very effective job of it, in some respects, they might be penalized. It could go the other way, I guess. But to me, whatever we're doing, we need to be somewhat consistent. Otherwise, you don't have as much to allocate based on actual filings in that second half of the year if half of what you gave away in the first half of the year was based on felony filings and not actual filings of the petitions.
Other thoughts?
Yeah, this is Alan. I think the other, and this kind of goes sideways a little, is we have to think about getting the cash out to the courts. If we hold off too much and nobody knows what they're getting until February, that's problematic.
Right. And I know a lot of courts have been earmarking or redirecting staff, so I totally agree. Waiting too long is going to be very problematic. But again, what we've seen so far may not be what we will see going forward. So,
To me, that argues for saying let's do 2A for now, you know, partly on felonies, partly on actual, and then 2B, so to speak, in the spring would be all actuals, but, you know, pick a longer time frame. Maybe we only do the 2A through May, but the 2B is May through December, so you get a longer actual frame, since presumably people are closer to having an accurate count May through December, you know, not going all the way back to November in some sense.
So
and we don't have to finally decide that now, I think. I think if we say, all right, we're giving out half of it based on actuals, say, through May, and then half on the average filings, or half of the half in a sense, and then we're saving half that we're going to give out in January based on actuals starting June 1st all the way through December 31st. That seems to me to kind of cover different options and getting people set up and saying, hey, you got to count this stuff if you want credit for it.
So is that a motion, Alan?
Okay, yeah.
Don't be shy now.
Yeah, that surprises you. So I move 2A, we give half the money out according to 2A, and then the other half we give out in December based on actual petition filings from, I'll just say, June 1st through December 31st, subject to change, you know. Well, I don't need that part. Just that's the way I'll make the motion.
So the difference is with respect to 2B, where it would be exclusive to petition filings, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It would be more akin to 3B's option.
Yeah. It also changes July 1st to June 1st.
Right.
Right.
Except I was saying go from June 1st just to give you more actual data, you know, for people that are counting it for now.
Right.
So it's 2A and 3B with the exception of the reference for the workload time frame being July or June 1 through December, correct?
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Are 2A and 3A the same?
2A.
Yeah.
So we're really on 3.
Yes.
3A and B with the change to June 1st instead of July 1st.
Right. It's 2A and 3B with the change in the time frame.
Gotcha.
Right.
So 3A, you've moved to
adopt 3A and B with the proviso that it be from June 1st, 2015 to December 31st, 2015.
Okay. Is there a second?
Mary Beth, I'll second that.
Okay.
Better.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, I have one additional thing. I just think it's critical that we begin as soon as humanly possible to capture these petitions and the time that's being spent on it, because that may affect the dollars and cents that we get next fiscal year, more than the $7 million that's being floated out there. Maybe it's less, but the bottom line is I really doubt it based on the work that we have to do, as people mentioned. We have to go through the hieroglyphics of handwriting petitions and still put them on calendar and tell the person, you know what, sorry, bud, you don't qualify. I mean, that's time spent. And I think that in the bottom line that we could justify, if we get real tight on our collection of data, we could justify more than $7 million next fiscal year.
Okay. So that's I think, something that we should probably look at going forward. But with respect to the motion, I think I can call for a vote at this point. Yes? Any further discussion? Okay. It's been moved and seconded to adopt or recommend option 3A and 3B with the proviso that the period of time include the month of June of this calendar year in the analysis related to petitions. All those in favor, vote by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any nays? Okay, the motion carries. There is, I'm sorry?
I was just going to ask Lotko a question. When is it that the legislature, DOF, has to start to calculate the savings from Prop 47? What year is that? Is that next year or the year following?
16-17 August, they have to look backwards and make a certification as to how much money needs to go into the Safe Schools and Neighborhoods account, if I remember all the names of the fund, but it's August of 16. So they have a process where they want to determine what cost and savings.
I was just going to mention that I know, you know, in the legislative hearings that I've sat in on, that seems to be a lot of the drive for them being hesitant to commit to subsequent years' fundings is because, you know, they were sold that this would eventually all result in cost savings. And so I think we're going to have to, I agree with Judge Boris, we're going to have to be very vigilant in demonstrating our costs. But at some point, I'm sure they're going to come knocking on our door to try to identify savings in other areas that this has created.
So acting on Judge Boris's suggestion, I'm curious to know, Patrick, if your group would be the assemblers of information related to the amount of time that it's requiring to process these petitions?
I think that would be our group, the Criminal Justice Office. As a matter of fact, we are we gathered estimates on how much each petition does take in our first survey, and in this next survey that should be going out probably in the next day or two, we are asking that question again, as well as how much additional time outside of individual processing of individual cases that the court is spending. And I believe the average we're hearing, it's so varied, but I think it's around 43 minutes, I think, is what we get from the statewide average, because
right,
it varies so much depending on the case.
Right, but I have two things. Number one, we're also looking at something else, and that is, I am actually doing motions to suppress evidence and jury trials on 11-350s that we never did before. I mean, they came in, they pled guilty, and they went to diversion. They don't do that now. Now they want to fight even the chance of going to diversion, because if he gets found guilty of the misdemeanor, you still get a chance to go to diversion. On felonies, they just took their diversion and walked away. I think we're going to find that there's not a tremendous amount of savings. Number two,
that's stuff we need to start capturing going forward, for sure.
Right.
That's
can I make a motion to set aside $100,000 for unforeseen expenses?
That is a motion. Is there a second?
Second. This is John Conklin in Fresno.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Further discussion? All in favor of moving forward with option four, vote by saying aye.
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 Nays? Motion carries. Let me ask this question, Francine. It sounds like you're already doing some activity as relates to measuring the time that it's taking to process the. Does that require a recommendation to be sent to the Budget Advisory Committee, or is it something that is already being done, so there's no need to make a recommendation?
We are already doing that. If you would like to make a recommendation for us to provide that information back to you all in some sort of a regular basis, though, we'd be happy to do that as well.
Okay.
If you want to do that.
So I think Judge Boris initiated the suggestion that that information be captured, and I think he was thinking of making a motion that that information be reported back to the courts or the subcommittee. Is that correct, Judge?
Correct. So moved.
Oh, okay. Seconded?
Second.
All right. Seconded by Judge Harmon. Further discussion? All in favor of that motion, vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. So we've hit all of the items that we contemplated for this subcommittee meeting, and I think that it would be helpful for us to convene maybe sometime in the early fall, just so that we can have a good idea of what we're seeing. And although the motion was to move forward with option 3B, I suspect we'll want to have a good sense of how that's shaping up. So we'll, unless Judge Boris feels differently, I don't know that we would have to convene again in advance of the Budget Advisory Committee meeting in July, realizing that we'll probably have to regroup in the fall. Any thoughts on that?
Nope, I agree.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the good of the order, or any other areas that perhaps we should be looking at, or maybe advising people what they should be doing?
No, except this is John Conklin at Fresno. I agree with every court needs to be encouraged to keep stats as best they can, because that's the only way we're going to get this money. And I don't know if we can get that message out now, but
if we can impose on staff to write an email that captures what the staff thinks we need to ask the courts to do, send it to a draft copy to David and I, and then maybe we can send it out under our names.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Somewhat.
I think
that's fine.
Yeah.
I need some clarification on how we're capturing the information. For instance, I daily have oral petitions in my court on violations of probation that come before me. And is it your feeling that an oral petition that goes down in our case management system as such a petition, will that be captured, or are we saying it has to be a written petition to be captured?
My thoughts are, if your case management system captures it as a petition, then I don't see a problem with that. But I think we're hesitant, I mean, because if some auditor comes in and says, what does all this mean, I think we're covered if you force people to do what they're supposed to do and write it down.
John Conklin again, I agree. I don't think we should exclude oral petitions, because many courts, to save time, are entertaining oral petitions that should be granted and granting them, yet they should get credit for that. So I agree.
Right, but they've got to be able to capture them. So if their case management captures it, I don't have an issue with that. But if their case management system doesn't capture it, then somebody better make sure it's written down. Otherwise, it's not going to be able to support the courts when we ask for money, because we have this extended workload because of Prop 47.
You can't get credit for what you don't record.
I think that should be clarified in any email that goes out. Now, in our court, our case management system does capture an oral petition, because we created a code specifically for that when I started seeing them. Of course, there's always the court reporter record, but I don't know that all counties are picking that up.
Yeah, but nobody even wants to. I agree with you. I think that's perfect. But who wants to sit and read every court reporter transcript?
Exactly.
Well, you probably pay more in having your transcript transcribed than you're going to get for
And the key, I guess, is that those oral petitions, if audited, would be captured on the court minutes.
Yes.
So whether it's in the case management system, some people have some sophisticated case management system that others don't, like Tyler, let's say,
Hey, are you saying something to me, David?
Oh, you didn't detect that, did you? But either if you have one or not, in terms of a sophisticated statistical gathering component, it could easily be audited and verified. So I think, you know, whether it's captured in a system or not, as long as it's being captured, I think that helps all of the courts who are in a position to produce it electronically or however else they have to proceed. So I agree that in the memorandum that we sent out or the email that everybody be noticed that this is something that they have to be very, very sensitive to if they want to have the petitions counted. Okay.
And then, Francine, going forward, is there any effort to collect some of this right now, anecdotal information such as Judge Boris was describing, so that we can start to get a sense of whether we want to gather it more empirically, that, you know, things like we are seeing more motions to suppress and misdemeanors. We're seeing because that's going to really come into play when they start to put together the cost savings. And we want to make sure we're really identifying, you know, are there truly cost savings here, or are we seeing expenditures in other areas?
Right. Yes, no, that's a great comment. We do have, in this newest survey that we're preparing to send out quickly, we do have a number of just open-ended text boxes, essentially, to put in that sort of information, and we do some prompts such asking about the impact, such as increased numbers of jury trials, you know, impact on collaborative courts, et cetera. So we have that sort of open-ended text information in our monthly survey, not every month, but we're asking it this month. And we also have been doing a number of phone calls. I don't know if any of you have received these phone calls yet, but we have some analysts here that are also doing some outreach to the courts to ask that type of information as well. So we're trying to compile it all. But we're mindful of the workload impact on, you know, your people that are trying to fill all this out. So it's a tension. So any support that you can give us in this data collection effort in your own court would be very much appreciated.
Well, and some of this is really going to have to come from the judges rather than our analysts. I mean, it's going to have to filter down to the analysts through the judges. So we'll have to get some consideration to how we really emphasize, you know, for the judges to let us know when they're seeing these things so we can make sure we're reporting that to you.
Great.
Okay.
And it appears that only the top-notch CEOs have supplied their counties with sophisticated case management systems.
Well, good thing we're getting one shortly.
I said supplied. That's past tense.
Oh, my brother. All right. Any other thoughts, questions? All right. I want to thank you all for joining the call and for your contributions, and we'll be ready to present to the Budget Advisory Committee later this month, or actually in July.
Great.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.